In this episode of Nightmare Echoes, Elizar and Margot cover the 1996 classic movie about teenage witches, The Craft, while referencing other movies such as Orphan First Kill and Scream. Feel free to laugh with Margot at my expense as I try to pronounce the deity these witches pray to, because I can't do it. I wanted to say that I have been loving all the downloads, and I'd like to hear from you guys and maybe learn a little bit about your horror likes. Our email is nightmareechoespod@gmail.com, and our Instagram is nightmareechoespod, so please reach out to us. Also coming up on the schedule are films such as Pan's Labyrinth, The Night of the Living Dead, Constantine, and The Devil's Backbone, so please subscribe if you don't want to miss any of those. Also, at the end of the episode, we do talk about the sequel, Craft Legacy. We recorded it at a different time, so if it doesn't sound the same, that's why. But we just had more we wanted to say. If you want to stick around for that part, please do. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Nightmare Echoes. It's Monday, Margo. That means another episode of Nightmare Echoes. How's it going, Margo?
It's definitely Monday for sure. Not another day.
Hello,
it's me again.
You always record them exactly on the Monday, moment you're hearing them.
As soon as it's magical, we're done, it just goes out onto the, the iTunes, whatever, Spotify, whatever. Wherever you grab your podcast from.
What are we covering now, Margo?
A classic, a 90s classic, The Craft.
All right, The Craft, starring Robin Tooney as Sarah, who was Empire Records and End of Days, Feruza Balk as Nancy. I knew her from Return to Oz.
Oh, funny.
She's a little girl in Return to Oz. That was cool. Neve Campbell as Bonnie, obviously from Scream. Rachel True as Rochelle, who was in Sharknado 2, the second one.
Okay, wow.
That's the title.
I know. I feel like I saw Sharknado 2 for some reason. I don't even think I've seen Sharknado 1.
Yeah? I mean, is it important? Skeet Ulrich as Chris, who was also from Scream. Christine Taylor as Laura Lizzie. From Dodgeball, The Wedding Singer, Zoolander, and Hey Dude.
Saved by the Bell.
She was in Saved by the Bell?
Oh, no. Was she?
I don't know.
No. I don't think she was. You're right. It's Hey Dude, not Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, it was a Hey Dude. And then
she's married to, what's his name, from Zoolander.
Okay.
The main character. What's the guy's name? The really famous actor. We can't think of his name. You do this all Is the it time. Ben something?
Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, yeah.
It's just funny watching you try to figure it out. And then we got Breckenmeyer as Mitt. Uh-huh. Who was in Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, Clueless, Rat Race, and Road Trip. Do you want to say anything spoiler-free before it starts?
No.
96? Has that been long enough?
1996 classic. I think everyone knows what happens in The Craft.
Okay, all right.
By now. Maybe. If not, I don't think you care. But maybe.
All right, the movie opens with three witches casting a spell, and it leads into the musical opening, which is a 90s cover of a 1966 Beatles song, which is Tomorrow Never Knows. After the credits, we see...
I want to pause on these
already,
credits.
Yeah,
these
let's
are
do
very
it.
90s credits.
The clouds?
You have clouds, and then you have their names like appear, like the Chiron, and then it kind of moves. It reminds me of like early PowerPoint graphics.
Sure.
Like, you know how all of in Star Wars, they have so many swipe screens because that technology just got embedded. I feel like the like hovering PowerPoint like fonts just got embedded because it was just like they move, they float onto the screen and then they move kind of. I was like, what? I don't know. I don't know why that was a point that just stuck in the head.
That's
funny.
Like,
okay, I mean, interesting.
It makes it a movie of its time.
Mm-hmm.
We get our main character, Sarah, and her dad. They're on a plane. When they get to their destination, it's raining. They get a cab. It's LAX. The director said he wanted to film there because there's only two locations in LA that really look LA. That's the Hollywood sign and LAX. So they were lucky to get that.
So we know where they are.
Right. But when they get to their house, it's this massive house.
Yeah.
Like three stories at least.
Yeah. It's really, really big.
But when they get inside, there's water everywhere.
So it's a fixer-upper.
It's a fixer-upper, yeah. What's interesting, the house, that exterior shot is a real house. Then they built an accurate set of the house on a set, but they made it very accurate to the actual house, which is interesting because you could do anything you wanted in a set.
Yeah,
but they're like, no, exactly like the house.
Oh, funny.
Well, then Sarah, they're unpacking And this man shows up at her front door carrying a snake, and it scares her. He asks her if she wants the snake because he found it in her backyard. The dad comes to rescue her, chases the man out, and then she screams because the snake is still in the house. And we see the dad like kill the snake with like some kind of... It's like a fire poker for fireplace, maybe?
I think so. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Then we cut to the next day. We're dropping Sarah off at school. Her dad says she can wait until she gets a uniform, but she says she can't hide at home all the time. And dad's like, why not? I'd love doing that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like her dad's nice. They have a good relationship.
Sure. She goes into school, the only one not wearing a uniform, which signatures kind of as an outsider. Now, while this... She wears this dress only one day in movie time.
Okay.
She wore it over a 3-month period when filming scenes.
Oh, funny.
She came to hate this dress.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because it's 25% of the movie is before they move to another day.
Yeah.
They're introducing this to everybody. And so since it's 25% of the movie, at the end of filming, her last scene filming with that dress, she burned it.
Oh, funny.
They let her burn it because she was so tired of it. Inside the school, we see the three witches, which casting the spell earlier. Nancy's shirt is untucked. Bonnie's wearing a big, heavy coat. They walk by three boys, which are Skeet Ulrich, Breckenmeyer, who's there, Chris and Mitt, and their other friend, the third one, is Trey.
Okay, sure. I didn't even know they had names. So, yeah. I mean, Chris, yes, but...
You have to really study these films to see... They say Trey twice in the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, that one's Trey.
Uh-huh.
Mitch says, scary bitch alert, and they start praying for protection because, you know, they're mean. Nancy doesn't break eye contact with them the whole time that they're doing this. Bonnie is reading an almanac, which promises that something new will arrive. Nancy says it's her rag, but Bonnie reads on that she believes it's their fourth. Nancy says they don't need a fourth, but Bonnie and Rochelle point out that they need someone to call the four corners, north, south, east, and west. Just then, a female security guard walks by, and Nancy jokes, maybe she could be the fourth because she loves a woman in uniform. In French class, the teacher is asking them about their weekend. In French, he asks, Mitt, how is weekend?
I have to laugh about this because if my French teacher did that, and mind you, I went all the way up to French 5 in high school, I'd be like, what?
He goes, oh, you want to know if I got laid? Yeah, I got laid. Like he's trying to do broken French. And Sarah starts speaking way better French than him. She's the new student. The teacher's really impressed by this. And Mitt's like, what is that trout sniffer saying about me? Then Mitt's like, hey, we live in California. Shouldn't we be learning Mexican? And Skeet Ulrich's character, Chris, whispers over. He goes, Spanish. Yeah, Spanish. And then we see that Sarah is spinning a pencil on her desk. And Bonnie notices that she's like floating it.
Yeah.
And
it's like drilling into the desk.
Right. It's just going. So apparently to accomplish this, there were magnets involved, but there was a man under the desk really up close to the actress, like invading her privacy space to make this trick work. Oh, the director was like, it's a little awkward, but it got the job done.
Yeah, that's really funny. That's something today that would just be done by CGI, I think.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, they did use CGI in here, but they wanted to mix practical effects when they could.
But I mean, CGI was not good in the 90s, so it would have been very obvious that it was CGI. Yeah.
There's obvious CGI that I'll probably point out later.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But when Sarah notices that Bonnie sees the pencil, she lets go of the magic. The pencil falls over. Now in biology class, Bonnie walks in to tell Nancy and Rochelle that she's here. They want to know who she's talking about. And Bonnie says it's someone to be our fourth. When Sarah comes in, she asks if she could sit with them. They don't say a word, and they just stare at her deadpan.
So. Yeah, they have like a little personalities going on too that they're trying to show us that Feroza Balk is like mean.
Yeah.
And she's like doesn't give any F's or whatever, or she's at least projecting that.
Yeah.
And then Neve Campbell's character is really nice and like shy.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the other one's personality is. She seems nice and like she's kind of more the most normal one.
I think she's the most normal
one.
Yeah,
she's like
the
most normal. She dresses the most normal. She's like.
Well, it was in a deleted scene they took out, but you could see it on the DVD. They do establish she is the only black person in the whole school.
Okay, yeah.
So it makes her more of an outsider, an easy target for bullying.
Yeah.
And when the script was written, her character was not defined by racism because they didn't know she was going to be black. Yeah. Her character had an eating disorder.
Okay.
But when they hired her, they made it about racism, and then the actress wasn't sure that that was a good move, but looking at it nowadays, she's like, she thought it's a really important message, and she's proud to have played a character that got to battle against that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. But they missed the opportunity to let her sit with them because, you know, Nev Campbell's character, Bonnie, is like, oh, you can.
Well, because, well, Fariza, yeah, Fariza Balk basically is like, no. And they just go along with whatever she's like, what's her name? Nancy. Which Nancy. I think was a really funny name for her. Yeah. I don't know, like, Nancy, that just seems like a nice, wholesome name.
Sure. And then, yeah, well, and maybe it's just because I've known so much of Nev Campbell in the Scream films.
Yeah.
To refer to her as Bonnie this whole movie was different, you know?
Oh, what is her name in the Scream films? I don't remember.
Sydney.
Oh, yeah. That's
Sydney Prescott.
That's right.
Yeah. So then at lunch, Chris shows up and apologizes for his friends because they are assholes. And Sarah has the best reply. She's like, well, you know, you are who you hang out with.
Yeah.
And he instantly agrees. He's like, yeah. And he's like, wait, did you call me an asshole?
Yeah. I mean, is the beginning of the movie supposed to be like showing that Sarah is like smart, because that doesn't go anywhere. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
It really doesn't go anywhere.
Well,
like,
she knows
she's good
French.
At French. She's like being, she's a really smart comeback for everybody.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem to, like, why? I don't know. I guess we're building character.
I guess we're just building character. I mean, she definitely does find Chris attractive.
Yeah.
You know, she likes, she does like Chris. She says that she's.
Ski Ulrich is a 90s hunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So there you go. Of course. Yeah. So she says that she apologizes for the joke, says that she was just had a bad experience with the three girls in class. He's like, which girls? She's like, the ones behind you. She's like, don't look. And so he does this really stealthy stretch maneuver.
Yeah.
And looks behind
him. It's a visual medium. Yeah. Nobody can see your stretch.
You got to hear it in the
stretch. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did it.
Yeah, it's a fantasy of the mind, or a theater of the mind.
Theater of the mind. And so he looks over his shoulder and he tells him, oh, those are the bitches of Eastwick. He tells her that Bonnie has burns all over her body, and this is why we can know that she covers herself like crazy. Mm-hmm. He says that Nancy's a real slut, but not that he has any experience in this. He says that they're all witches. Mm-hmm. He asks what she's doing after school, like if he's going to ask her out for a date. Mm-hmm. And he's like, she's like, oh, nothing. He's like, oh, well, I'm busy. Mm-hmm. I got football practice, but you can come and watch me. And she's like, oh, wow, football practice.
Yeah.
But then we cut to after football practice.
She kind of does. I mean, she's kind of like lingering, like maybe she'll do it.
Yeah, and then
just checking them out.
Yeah, and then the other girls come up, and when they're doing this, the song "How Soon Is Now," which later became the theme song for Charmed, like "I'm the sun and the air," which is interesting because the co-writer of this and director Fleming wrote a script about three witches, and he pitched this song as the theme song. Mm-hmm. The company turned it down, and then less than 2 years later, they came out with the show Charmed. And people thought for years that he was working on it because it was his idea.
Yeah.
And they're like, they blatantly stole it from him.
Oh, wow.
And it's crazy that happens. It's so unfortunate. The three of them come up. They ask her out for coffee. They tell her that Chris is just a jerk and that most of the guys make their girlfriends come and watch them play practice football, like if that's interesting at all. Mm-hmm. Nancy yells out, go long, Chris, and he trips. It's funny because apparently the stunt people were really impressed because he was able to do that on his own. He didn't need a stunt person to fall for him. But apparently he has a theater background. Like people do their own stunts.
Like pratfalls or whatever.
Right. It's not like you can get someone to sub in for you so you can do your stunt. They apologize for how they acted in biology class. When they ask her out for coffee, Sarah says that her dad's expecting her. Mm-hmm. And they tell her that she can make something up. Mm-hmm. And they say that they're going to go shopping.
Yeah, it's always interesting in these old timey. I mean, it's really sad to be calling a 1996 movie old-timey, but it is. These old-timey movies in high school, because now you could just, like, text your parents, right? Or, like, call your parents. And and I was thinking, like, when I was in high school, I think, I had a cell phone, at least by, like, junior year.
I think I got maybe one not when you. I was 21, yeah.
Well, you're older than me.
I am older, yeah.
So that's funny that you really couldn't just, like, call home and be like, hey, going out with the girls or whatever, but maybe have a cell phone or a payphone or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
So Sarah says that she doesn't have any money to go shopping with them, and Bonnie tells them that they get it, that they have a 5-finger discount.
They're gonna steal from a local woman-owned small business.
Ooh, they're evil. They're witches.
Witches. Not nice.
On the walk there, they ask why she moved. She said that San Francisco sucked, but she doesn't need a car here. They say that everywhere sucks. And then they notice the scars on her wrist, And Bonnie points out that she did it the right way. And Nancy's like, punk rock, which apparently was ad-libbed. The director says he didn't get it, but it seemed like everybody else did. So he left it in. That's
right. And so she tried to commit suicide.
Right. And then Rochelle's like, how do you know the right way? And she's like, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. It's awkward. And they get to this occult shop. And the occult shop's woman that runs it, her name is Lee Rio.
Okay, sure.
It's just so because you don't know names.
Oh, is that it? I don't remember.
L-I-R-I-O.
Okay.
Lirio.
Wait, what?
L-I-R-I-O.
Lirio?
Lirio. Yeah.
That's her first name?
That's her...
Or her only name?
That's Lirio. The only name she gets.
Okay, interesting.
Right. She, when we walk in, she's doing a spell on a candle, it looks like. And Bonnie asks Sarah to steal a book, and Sarah says no. Bonnie tells her that everything in nature steals, and Sarah says that's different because that is for survival.
I have to say that Sarah doesn't seem to cave to peer pressure, but then sometimes she does. Sure. But she has no problem being just like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, no, I'm not stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems to have some morals.
Yeah.
Which is good. Sarah tries to go explore the back curtain, and that's where the shop owner comes around and tells her that that area is not for her. She notices the ring and it says it was your mother's and confirms that it's true.
Sarah has her mom's ring.
Sarah has her mom's ring. And Sarah confirms that that's true. And then she asks Sarah if she's going to pay for that book she's holding. She says she is. And Lirio replies that she's not like her friends.
Mm-hmm.
On the way to the register, Sarah grabs some candles and Lirio asks her if she knows how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah says, yeah, you light the wick. And she says, oh, there's rules. Red is for love. And she goes, actually, here's a book to do it. And she picks up one more book and she tells her it's $20. And so she said she had no money, but now she has $20 to pay for the
thing. Isn't this book called The Craft?
She gives her a book called The Craft.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
The movie title.
They actually had these books produced for them.
Oh, funny.
All the books that were in there.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly,
they didn't just go to... Oh, no one's going to know what I'm talking about. I was going to say they're not going to just go to their high school library to grab it. This is a callback, or depending on when these episodes
come it's a callback.
It's a callback to Jennifer's body.
Because in Jennifer's body, they had, spoiler alert, they had an occult section in their small town high school library.
A very robust occult session.
Yeah.
Section.
Very informative. That's awesome. Yeah. But no, the production had them produce a lot of the books. What's also interesting is that they had a witch from the biggest coven in the U.S. as an advisor to the movie. Because, according to the director, a lot of witch movies in the past had done really poorly that represented witches incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
And the covens would get together and chant against the movie to wish upon them bad fortune.
I see.
And they didn't do well. And since they had the biggest coven on their side, this person who's a big part of this coven organized the biggest coven chant to wish good tidings on the movie. And the movie did amazing in sales. So he's like,
it worked.
For whatever that means to you, director Fleming was like, it seems to have worked. Sarah says she's never been into that stuff before, and Lyra points out that maybe she's a natural witch and her power comes from within.
Mm-hmm.
Later, they're in a sketchy part of the city, and Sarah thinks it's time to head home. Bonnie tells her just to go straight ahead. This woman approaches Sarah, begging for money to feed her baby. You can't really see a baby because it's wrapped.
It's probably not a real baby.
It's not a real baby. And the man from earlier with the snake comes up saying, hey, I know you. He's got a smaller snake in his hands this time, but he starts running after her. When she gets scared, she crosses the street. He starts coming after her, and all four witches, three are one side of the road, one on the other side, look at the man at the same time, and right then, he's hit by a car.
Mm-hmm. What is this? Who is this man? Like, is he just some random man who likes snakes?
Seems to be a random man that likes snakes.
Yeah, because he pops up twice. Like, seems to be important, but then, now he's dead.
Now he's dead.
And never mentioned again.
Well, they say that when they run to this part in the woods where they seem to hang out, it's got, like, a back of a car seat.
Uh-huh.
There is, like, their only couch, and then it looks like they have a blanket already laid down, like they hang out here all the time.
Yeah.
They think that they killed him. They're like,
I know, but why? But what was the significance of this man? He was just creepy, and so they all killed
him. He scared her. He was chasing her. So it helps them bond as a group.
I guess. I just don't understand why it's the same guy twice, right? Why couldn't it just been some creepy guy?
So he could say, I know you?
I don't know. Yeah. I guess. It was weird. I don't know. I was like, it like some kind of like a forgotten plot line or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So then Rochelle is like, we have a fourth now. Maybe he will really listen to them. Sarah wants to know who they mean. And they explain about Mano. And Mano is more than nature. Say it.
I think it's Manon.
Manon.
Yeah, M-A-N-O-N, right?
It's M-A-N-O-N.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's how you pronounce it.
Oh, French. I thought the last N was silent.
It is. Manon.
Manon. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. But they explain that it's...
It doesn't matter.
Okay. I was like, oh my gosh. They explain that it's nature or it's more than nature. It's everything. Sarah's like, is it like God? And Nancy's like, if God and the devil were playing football, Manon would be the stadium that they played on. It would be the sun that shone down on them. Bonnie asks if this stuff happens to Sarah a lot. And she says, never like that. It's always getting messed up. Bonnie wants to know where she learned it. And Sarah says she doesn't know. And that Bonnie says, so you're a natural wish. And Sarah says it just never goes the way she wants it to. She could wish for it to rain and the pipe would burst in her room. Nancy doesn't believe her. And she's like, no, it's true. She says, I would be tired of noise, so I would ask for it to get quiet, and then I would go deaf for like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And as Nancy tells her, well, if you could do that, you should try invoking the spirit. The way Nancy describes it sounds like possession, but she says that he will make everything that's ever gone wrong in your life all better. And Sarah says that nothing makes anything all better. Sarah gets up to go because they're freaking her out. Nancy laughs and says Sarah is scared, and Bonnie points out that they need her. Nancy says, like a hole in the head. Rochelle says that Sarah will be back. The following night, Sarah's on the roof with Chris, and he won't shut up about heads. He's talking about how the other girls have weird heads, but they're really too big, but he prefers that more than shrunken heads. And Sarah wants to know what his obsessions with heads are, and he points out that he just noticed that she has a really good one.
Okay. And I guess this works for her.
It works for her because they start kissing.
I mean, I'm not. I'd be like, ooh, no thanks.
I mean, it helps that he's a 90s hunk.
That's it. He's a 90s hunk. That's it. That's the only thing he goes has going for him.
You don't have to have, like, amazing wit, I guess. And then another couple there leaves who include Laura Lizzie, who we will eventually see is on the swim team with Rochelle. But when they leave, it leaves Sarah and Chris alone. Chris invites her back to his place, but she doesn't want to go. And she asks if Chris is mad, but he says, no, he's not mad. He's okay. Mm-hmm. I get that she didn't want to go, but I think she could have worded a little better. Like, oh, I don't want to go, but, you know, we could still hang out. But
I don't think she needed to.
No?
No, well, I thought she was plenty nice how she said it.
Yeah, no, it just sucks for her what happened the next day, which is not her fault.
Okay, but obviously what happened is he wanted her to come back and have sex with her, and she didn't want to.
Yeah.
And that was clear, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and so that's what
happened. It wasn't like that his feelings were hurt because she didn't want to hang out with him. That wasn't the issue.
He was a jerk, yeah. Okay. All right. The next day in biology class, the three girls come to ask Sarah how her date with Chris went. They tell her that Chris went around to the whole school that says that they did have sex and that Sarah was the worst lay he's ever had. And that coming from him means a lot. And then we look up to the front. We see Laura Lizzie and her friends up in front of the class laughing at her because she was there the night before that they saw it. So Sarah goes to confront Chris at his locker and Mitt runs interference, but she goes right through him. She asks why he lied. And he makes a very dramatic scene. He's like, look, I don't want to go out with you again. And she yells, fuck you. She leaves with watery eyes and Mitt says, she's going to cry, then I'm going to cry, and we're all going to cry.
Yeah, they're jerks.
They're jerks. They're jerks. Interestingly, they were going for a PG rating, a PG-13 rating.
Okay.
And they're allowed one non-sexual fuck.
Okay.
Like to say fuck in a non-sexual way.
So right? that was it.
That was it. But when they took it to the MPA, they go, oh, no, it's a teenage movie about witchcraft. Yeah. You're getting R no matter how much you cut out of this movie.
So they could have cursed a lot
more. So they were like, had we known that before, we would have said it a lot more.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. Oopsies.
All right. Then we get to the swimming pool. Rochelle's on the diving board, and she seems to be struggling to dive. The moment she finally does, Laura Lizzie yells, shark, and this messes up her dive. Yeah,
she looked
which sucks. False. They couldn't find a stunt person that was a diver. They hired a girl from a local school that was on the diving team. And she was shocked that they wanted her to do a bad dive. And they made her do it 17 times.
Oh, no.
kept refilming. It's like, no, we want you to do a backflop. We need you to fall over.
Yeah.
And she had trouble doing a bad dive.
She kept by muscle memory doing a good dive.
Right. Oh, so she had to it was hard for her to mess up that, which I just thought was so funny.
Do you think while you were mid dive, somebody yelling at you, would you even register?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not a diver.
I'm not either.
I feel like it wouldn't. But yeah, whatever. It's fine. It's a movie. Who cares?
Then back in the locker room, Laura Lizzie continues her verbal abuse by saying she found one of... She first says it's a pubic hair and then goes, oh, it's one of Rochelle's nappy hairs. Rochelle goes up to her and confronts her and saying, what don't you like about me? And she says, oh, you want to know? And she's like, yeah, I really want to know. And then she uses some altered version of the N-word, which I still don't want to say.
Yeah, I think that's for the best.
Right?
Yeah.
And then she's like, to let her know this, man.
How did you feel about this overt racism in this movie? Like, do you think it was as shocking in 1996 as it was?
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't remember it. I remembered her being racist, but I don't remember how bad it was.
Yeah.
And it was pretty shocking to me. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, it's just as much where we see that Chris is a jerk.
Yeah.
And anything bad that's going to happen to him, we feel like, okay, he's going to deserve whatever happens to them.
Yeah, I get. For sure, we're supposed to think she's a bad person.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just like, whoa. Like, I don't think you would see this in a... Obviously, you wouldn't see this in a movie today. If they were being racist, it wouldn't be as overt, because you just can't get away with that, right? Maybe. She says in the locker room and all her friends like laugh.
Sure. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, she basically outright says, I don't like you because you're black, but in a worse way.
Yeah, exactly. Then we cut to Bonnie at the hospital. They're talking through that she's going to get a new form of gene therapy, mm-hmm. which is non-invasive, but very painful, which sounds invasive to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's a needle jabbing through her body like a million times.
You know, what I thought is that she only has the, like, burns or whatever on her back, so who cares? That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I guess, again, this is, like, a fake fictional character. And also, you know, in high school, I guess you would be very sensitive to that, right?
Yeah.
You'd be... And it's, you know, back in the 90s, we don't have like body positivity and stuff that we do today.
Sure. Yeah. It's hard to watch, though. It like her, like she could scream.
Oh, yeah.
When she screams, it's a real scream.
I was thinking there's absolutely no way you get me to do that. Absolutely no way. I would just be like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, they glued the scars onto her.
Yeah.
No needle really poked her body. That was prosthetic.
Yeah.
But they said it was actually really painful to get it off when they needed to get
like
it off.
Oh, like peeling off a Band-Aid?
Yeah. Aww. So in that scene where they're like moving it away, it still hurt her to do it, which is interesting. Sarah at her home. It's a dark, stormy night, and she's remembering cutting her wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Nancy's home life, which is really weird. Her mom's a drunk. Her name's Grace.
And she like lives in a trailer park,
too. Right. It's storming like crazy. Mm-hmm. And Grace is yelling at her husband, who is Nancy's stepfather, for not paying the electricity bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's a storm, Grace.
Yeah.
The lights are off because of the storm.
Did you get this was kind of like mirroring Sarah's situation?
Where they had like,
because Sarah, when Sarah really comes, nice parents. Yeah, Sarah comes in to her huge house and it's like leaking and they just, you know, but her parents are so nice. Like they obviously, they might not be like mega rich, although they're going to like a private school.
This is
what I didn't quite understand. Like, I guess everyone's rich. And then I guess how's Fruza Balk going
there? She could have gotten a scholarship.
Yeah, I guess she's scholarship, but they don't make any point to say that she's like super smart, really academic, you know, anything like that. But maybe we just have to assume that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
So Sarah has a stepmom who seems really nice and that she likes. Sarah's house is like really big. And now Fruza Balk is going home. Nancy is going home. Mm-hmm. And her house is also leaking.
Right.
But yeah, her mom's like is whatever, but her stepdad's about to be pervy. Is that you were about to get to that?
Yeah, sure. Well, her mom is definitely drinks all the time,
though. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. So then the next day we have a different class where we have a nun as the teacher, and the three girls are telling Sarah that they're going on a road trip. And then the nun gets mad. They're like, you know, to quiet them because they're not supposed to be talking because they're taking a quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the scene where they're on the bus, the three kids on the bus that were right in front of them, where apparently the director's nieces and nephews or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. He's like, they didn't get it because they knew me. They really auditioned hard for this role. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, bullshit. And then we get the classic line that was on the trailers when they get off the bus and the bus driver tells them to watch out for those weirdos. And Nancy replies, we are the weirdos, mister.
Yeah. I think that this scene really cemented the style in this movie, which I think still looks good. Still holds up.
Yeah.
Great 90s style, some but not so great. But this is like very good. I feel like you put those outfits on anybody today and it would still look cool.
Yeah.
And they all have like their very separate styles.
Yeah, completely.
So yes, you have like Nancy, who's like very goth kind of looking.
Yeah.
And then Bonnie, is that Bonnie? Nephew?
Mm-hmm. Is that's nephew?
Yeah. So she wears kind of black too, but she's like very covered up.
Yeah.
Because of the scars or whatever. And then Rochelle is like more kind of like traditional, like popular kind of outfit. Right. And then I don't know what Sarah's style is. I guess just traditional like 90s, like kind of cool girl 90s yeah. style. But anyway, yeah, I just thought the outfits were really cool in this movie.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Yeah.
Interesting about that is that they kept getting comments from like after the dailies that maybe they're too goth, maybe they're too makeup, like maybe like make them prettier.
Uh-huh.
And so I think Neve Campbell was quoted as saying, the more powerful they got, the shorter their skirts got.
Yeah, that's funny. Like throughout
the movie. And I know that they're more confident in themselves at that point, so that's what it's trying to show.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
That it was really like influences, like, we want to make sure that people know they're pretty girls.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty funny.
That's really funny.
So this scene, the ceremony scene, they used real, you know, ceremonies that they, you know, consulted their coven representative to make sure that they are doing it right. And it was one long one take. And the director's up until the point where she stabs the knife into the ground, they go from one character holding the knife to one character holding the knife, and it's all in one take.
I forgot something funny is that they show up, and this is after they're doing the like the knife step into scene where they're like, what is it? I trust you or something. What is it?
Yeah,
I'd rather come into the circle, trust or die. Or, I don't remember. What is it?
It's better that you should rush upon this blade than enter the circle with fear in your heart.
There you go.
How do you enter?
Yeah.
With perfect love and perfect trust.
Uh-huh. And then they remove the knife.
Yeah.
So this is a side story. This is not what I was going to say. I got sidetracked.
Okay.
So I read these books when I was a kid by L.J. Smith. When probably a lot of girls my age know who I'm talking about.
I know who
But L. they Smith wrote, is. Oh, did you read L.J. Smith?
I read the Forbidden Trilogy.
Oh, funny. So anyway, so she wrote books called The Circle about witches or whatever. Okay. And these are like quote unquote real witches. Like they have magic powers or whatever. But anyway, but they do this like ceremony where they hold the knife and then you have to walk into the knife. So it's like even more than just standing there.
Yeah.
And my friend in middle school, I think. Yeah, I think it's middle school and not high school. Was it high school? No, middle school. She wanted us to do it, and I would not do it. I'm like, no, I don't trust you not to back up. It wasn't that I thought she was going to stab me, but like, I guess I didn't trust the timing of it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, how fast do you think a kitchen knife is going to pierce you? You know what I mean? Oh, but man. I would not do it.
I get it. I mean, I wouldn't do it either.
Okay, but that's not what I was going to say. What I was going to say is when I saw the next scene where they have all this whole setup, they have like all this crap. They have like a wine decanter, like candles, like all kinds of crap and paraphernalia. I'm like, how did they get that?
They've been stealing literally, it.
No, like how did they transport it? Because I remembered them having these tiny little purses when they got off the bus. I rewound twice until I realized that Rochelle was carrying a backpack. And I'm like, they made poor Rochelle carry all the stuff with them. That's not cool, man.
Oh, man. Well, maybe it was a bag of plenty. Like from D&D where you just keep, you could fit more and more and more in there.
I think
the answer is magic.
I don't think that was it. I think just made Rochelle carry everything.
I think that's true. There's a scene later where there's the big final battle and Sarah is facing the three witches and right front and center is Nancy. Slightly off to the left is Bonnie. And then way in the background is Rochelle.
Poor like, Rochelle.
Oh, she's there too. She's there too. It's interesting because Rochelle's actress pointed out that they often left her off of the posters. They left her off of, like, she was barely in the trailer. They had to remind her, hey, she's in the movie too. And she was the only one that didn't get invited to, like, the big award ceremonies at the end of the year, which really
because
sucks.
She's black, probably? Is that what they think?
That's what they think, but it just really sucks that
that's
they just...
really, yeah.
That's unfortunate.
That's a bummer, yeah.
Yeah. They all cut, you know, they poke their fingers. The director wanted his finger to be the finger poked, and they all freaked out. They're like, no, insurance. Like, they didn't know the real rules, but this he couldn't. So they had to, like, build a prosthetic and use fake blood. And he's like, but... So he in the commentary, he wanted fans to know, I wanted to bleed for this movie. They wouldn't let me. Like, they wouldn't let me bleed for this movie, which is pretty funny. And then they cut their fingers. They put the blood in this chalice, which has, you know... I guess, other liquid in it.
Had wine in it, yeah.
Right, yeah. And so they're drinking it. They filmed the scene a lot of times, but only one take did it dribble out on Nancy's face. Oh my gosh,
because when I was watching that, I'm like, there's nothing in that cup. I can tell there's nothing in that cup when they're drinking out of it. And then, but then the end, I was like, well, I guess there was, because Nancy has something spilling out. So there must have been something
there,
in the cup.
I think there was wine in it.
Or some kind of liquid. But maybe just when she drank out of it.
Well, according to the director, they were all drinking.
Oh, and so they actually did drink
she
out of it.
Accidentally spilled it that one take, and they just thought it looked so authentic sold it that they kept it.
Oh, funny. So they really were
there
something.
There
in
was
it?
Something in the cup.
Okay, it looked empty.
I mean, that wouldn't work in COVID days where they're all drinking out of the same cup.
Yeah, you can't drink out of the same cup. That's not COVID compliant. I guess you'd wipe the glass cup with.
So
the
they all
hear. Swamps.
So yeah. So when they're all wishing for the things they want. Rochelle wants to not hate people. Even racist, bleach blonde bitches. Mm-hmm. Sarah asks to love herself more and allow others to love her. And then she adds a picture of Chris Hooker into the circle.
Which I'm like, why, girl?
I know. I didn't get it. He's obviously a jerk. He told everybody a lie.
Yeah.
And she still likes him.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
And the movie does nothing to make it seem like he has some kind of hidden depth to him either.
No.
So, like, I'm like, why? I don't get it.
She didn't. She wasn't into it for revenge because
no, that not would make at all. Sense. She like wanted him to like her.
She did. Yeah. Bonnie asked for the power to be beautiful outside as well as in, and I was yelling at the screen. Done. You're Neve Campbell.
Yeah.
Hello. Like you're already beautiful. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Just like I like almost always comment on these quote geek character or not. She's not a geek, but these outcast girl characters. I'm like, there's absolutely no effing way that Neve Campbell would be an outcast in high school, at
that
least
no
to
one
boys.
Noticed her, right?
Yeah, like who would be asking her out unless she was like a real mean, like okay, like Nancy.
Sure.
So, but yeah, there's absolutely no way. Right. But whatever. Okay.
Sure. And then Nancy asks for all the power of Mano. Mm-hmm. And Sarah asks, is that all? And they end by saying, blessed be. Mm-hmm. And then this crap ton of butterflies came out. Mm-hmm. They had like the actors just looking up and they CGI'd all the butterflies. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is after this ritual, a real butterfly flew in and freaked the crew out like, it's working. which is this hilarious. Then the next day in French class, Chris can't stop looking at Sarah. And the teacher's getting after him for he keeps turning around because they might be having a quiz or something. They're like, I think it's working. They're walking to chapel. Chris comes up. He wants to talk to them and then he runs back. Mm-hmm. He tries to give this lame excuse, that which is sort of an apology, where he's like, when you're a guy and I am, people expect things. And it's really annoying. And she asks, well, did you tell your friends? And he's like, tell your friends what? That you're a lying sack of shit. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, but I will tomorrow. I'll start telling the truth tomorrow. I'm like, why? They're right there. Tell them today.
I don't know.
But he asked if he could sit next to her during mass, which is interesting. They had really hard time finding a church that would allow them to film a movie about witchcraft.
Witches. Yeah.
And so the director said, you have to really find that church that's down on their luck, desperate enough to let you film a movie about witchcraft in their church because they need more money.
Yeah. That's
Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah.
Walking into there, they can't stop laughing. Sarah asks Chris to hold her books and then asks her to hold Bonnie's as well because they're so heavy. Then they hang their purses above his head and Mitt's like, hey, Chris, will you hold my jock for me? It's kind of heavy. And then he follows by saying, what are you, a Stepford boy? Which was a Breckenmeyer ad-lib line. You know where Stepford Wives is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I like looked up. I knew the 2004 version. I knew there was a book. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize it was a 1975 movie.
Yeah.
That was followed up by a 1980 movie, a 1987 movie, and a 1996 movie. We had Revenge of Stepford Wives, the Stepford Children, and the Stepford Husbands. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about all
that. I didn't know all that. Yeah,
I knew about the original one and the remake.
It's so Sarah tells him to sit, and he sits down immediately, and she tells him to pay attention to church, and Rochelle's excited across the way. She's in another set of pews. She's excited that the spell is working, but Nancy seems really annoyed.
Yeah.
Then we get the sleepover scene. Mm-hmm. Wheel of Fortune is playing on the TV, and Sarah and Bonnie are trying to throw popcorn in each other's mouth, and Rochelle's laughing because they're 2 feet away from each other, and they can't get it. Mm-hmm. Nancy sits on Rochelle as she's lying down and she tells her to get off her. Rochelle sarcastically says that Nancy is light as, yeah, you're light as a feather. And then would finish that during space travel. So she says, and then Sarah asks if she's ever played light as a feather, stiff as a board. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what she's talking about. So they tell Rochelle to lie down. And they said, we all stick our fingers under. And Nancy's like, underwear? Yeah. like they all giggle about that. It's funny. The director said this is something his sister and her friends played as they were kids all the time.
Is this a girl? Did you do this with your friends?
I never did this. No, I saw it in a movie called The Gate. Uh-huh. And they, like, the kid hovered and, like, then they couldn't get him back down. It was, like, all freaking out.
We definitely did this with my friend group. Did it work? No, it did not work.
So the director...
Okay, what are you going to say?
Oh, no, go. What are you saying?
I'll say, I heard that it can work if you have enough people.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what the director said. It magically seemed to work if you have enough people, but of course, when you let go, the person doesn't stay there floating.
Well, it's just because you have so many people carrying the weight.
That it becomes light work.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Yeah.
So Rochelle's now on the ground, and they're walking through the steps of how to do the game. Sarah says they have to pay attention more. When Sarah says that you have to mention that she's made of air, Bonnie asks if it's her whole body or just her head. And Rochelle calls Bonnie a cow. They start chanting. It starts working. Rochelle rises in the air. They all remove her fingers and she just floats there, but she doesn't think it's working. When she opens her eyes, she doesn't know how to get down. She says, whoa.
You could probably just step down, but whatever.
Well, she's like not that laying. High. Yeah.
I know. She
doesn't, you know, like,
I guess.
Sarah tells her to shut up, you're going to fall. The camera pans around so that we can see that it's,
there's,
you know,
nothing holding her
up. Nothing holding her up. Which it was, she was lying on a platform and it was a metal pole and they digitally removed it all.
That's
how they did the trick. But it was pretty, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
When the mother opens the door, she hits the ground. The mother asks if they're getting high, which I thought was a cool play on words because they all start laughing. And then Rochelle's like, you have to try it, which apparently was an ad lib line because when I guess they still dropped her.
Yeah.
And she thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Like, you got to try it.
Yeah.
Then we get a montage scene here. You know, they're making plans with their books at lunchtime.
Yeah, I liked all the scenes where they're, like, being friends.
Right. They have a scene where they're watching Bewitched.
Yeah.
They're walking through school looking all happy.
Yeah.
And when Sarah passes Laura Lizzie in the hall, she rips a strand of hair out of her head. And Laura Lizzie's like, hey, you pulled my hair out. And she goes, oh, I thought I saw a bug. They make shampoo for that, you know? And Laura Lizzie calls her a stupid bitch. Then we see a scene where Sarah is using that strand of hair and she's braiding it into Rochelle's hair. And Rochelle asks what's going to happen to her. She says nothing if she's nice to you. And they also mention that the root's not blonde so that they know that she's, you know, a fake blonde.
Yeah.
Rochelle asks about the picture of Sarah's mom. She tells her that her mom died during childbirth. Bonnie is topless, but she's holding a blanket over her. Nancy is performing a spell on her back, you know, praying that her back gets better. Bonnie is asking Mano to take her scars away. At the pool, Laura Lizzie has just dived and Rochelle's up next. Laura Lizzie tells Rochelle not to hit her head on the board. And the teacher actually steps in and tells her to put a lid on it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
As Laura Lizzie takes off her swimming cap, clumps of hair come with it.
Yeah.
And Laura Lizzie fills her head and it looks like a bald spot. And it also looks infected. It looked kind of gross.
Yeah, it looks gross. Yeah.
When Laura Lizzie is no longer able to distract her, Rochelle steps up and does an amazing dive.
A perfect dive.
And the teacher's just impressed.
Yeah.
Back at the hospital, the doctor's ready to see the results of the test. And she's telling her, don't worry if it didn't work this time. We're probably going to have to do multiple passes. But the scar tissue just seems to be coming off as she wipes it away. And she has beautiful skin.
Yeah,
underneath.
You know what I thought? Like, this is going to be a case study that really throws off their data.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
That's not fair to their case study. All these people are going to get tortured because it worked on one person.
Just one person. Like, we had amazing results, and it probably doesn't even work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's, okay, this is a tangent. There's a new horror movie that came out of Ireland called Double Blind. And it's about a, you know, double blind study where all these people are giving these study drugs, and apparently they have all these horrible side effects and they're trying to keep them awake, and then they realize that if they let them sleep they die a horrible death. And so now they're all stuck, not able to sleep, and I don't know what happens in the movie because I'm excited about it though. So there's a tangent. In class, Mitt is telling his friends that, hey, you have to stop that or you're gonna go blind. And he goes, oh, will I also get hairy palms? And the director claims, I don't know what those jokes are about, but everybody else thought they were funny. Like, then the girls are wondering if this is the day that Bonnie comes back. Just then she does does come in, and the teacher's like, hey, class started at this time. She's like, oh, my pedicure ran late. And she takes off her coat, and she's like very showing a lot more skin. Mm-hmm. And then like Mitt and Trey notice her for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, hi, how you doing? And she's embarrassed from the attention.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Now, on the school lawn, Rochelle and Bonnie are giving Sarah all this credit for their improved lives, and Nancy's not happy about it.
Yeah.
So Nancy runs off. Rochelle says that Nancy's upset because her spell isn't working, and they asked her what the spell was, and she said she was praying that she wouldn't be poor white trash anymore. And Rochelle told her, you're white, honey. Just deal with it. This is where the director said, like, really signified the last time we saw all four of them together. Mm-hmm. After this, it was never like they were never all four in the same shot for the rest of the movie. We see Nancy praying over candles. When she comes out of her room, her stepfather is trying to see through her bathrobe. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where, like you mentioned, he's kind of pervy.
Yeah.
Nancy's mother, Grace, she's like, you're supposed to be a father to that girl. And he says, I'm not her father. Her father's that guy that paid you $50 for a quick bang in the back seat. And so she's like, she like hits him, and then he freaks out saying, don't you ever touch me. And she's scared, thinking she's about to get hit. And Nancy yells, stop. Right behind her, the fire ignites up. I think the microwave explodes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, her stepfather, whose name is Ray, I found out in this scene.
Okay, sure.
He starts having a heart attack. And then they're in the ambulance on the way to riding with him. And then we cut to them meeting a man over Ray's life insurance policy.
Yeah, he died. He dead.
Right?
He done dead.
He did. As a result of his death, they're getting $175,000, which is something like $360,000 in today's money.
So I also looked this up because they were going bananas over that sum of money. Sure. Now, I realize these are like poor people.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
You have like no money. Yeah. Right. Even $175,000 today would be life-changing. I mean, it would be life-changing for us, too.
Yeah.
but I'm just like, they acted like he said $1 million. Like, this they kept repeating the amount. Like, it was an unbelievable amount. And I'm like, it's gotta be so much more than it is today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, today, like, this with, yeah.
It's so like, I was like okay, 360,000 today. Okay, like, 360,000, all right. That's a good amount. Like,
sure.
You can like buy a house with that, especially in the 90s. Like,
yeah.
And they buy a condo. But like, you know, like you.
They keep calling it their apartment though.
Yeah.
They might not be smart. They might be renting.
Oh no.
Well, right?
I'll just say that's not good.
I know.
But yeah. So like, cause I was like $175,000. I mean, yeah, that's a good chunk of change, but
yeah,
it's not unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, I could pay off a house with that.
Oh yeah,
we have $360,000. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So then we cut to the three girls walking up. They are wearing more black than normal because it's like they're mourning him. And for some reason, Nancy is wearing a beret in this scene.
Yeah, I also was like, what?
Yeah. But she takes it off as soon as they get inside the apartment. Mm-hmm. Grace is really excited about her jukebox. This is another one long shot.
Mm-hmm.
They get in and people are doing different things in the scene. Mm-hmm. Two of the girls go over to the jukebox and the camera pans over. She's all excited about this jukebox.
Two pieces of furniture in the whole living room, a couch and a jukebox.
Right.
But it is a beautiful apartment. They have wall-to-ceiling windows. Mm-hmm. Wall-to-ceiling. No. Floor-to-ceiling windows.
Yeah, I didn't even think it was wrong when you said it. And the jukebox only plays Connie Francis, and the girls have no idea who Connie Francis is.
I don't know who Connie Francis
is. It was playing the song at the moment. Okay. It was Connie Francis, apparently. Nancy calls them to the room, and Grace is there with a drink, and she's like, come on, let's party.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it seems like Nancy's still embarrassed by her mom. Then they look up in books on glamour.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah goes first and she changes her eye color and no one's impressed.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, contacts can do that. So then she wants something bigger. So she puts her hands over her hair and her hair changes to blonde. Mm-hmm. And then when she shakes it out, the hair returns to normal.
Mm-hmm.
Rochelle wants to be a blonde and Bonnie's like, no, not a good idea. And Nancy says she wants a smaller ass.
This effect was not that successful in my...
Sure. Do you know how they did it?
No.
So do you know that this whole movie she was wearing a wig?
No.
Okay.
That explains a lot though.
Yeah, it does, right? So in Empire Records, do you see Empire Records?
Yeah.
She has a shaved head.
Right, yeah.
So she was already hired for this role, shaved her head for Empire Records,
showed
up to the set, and she had to show a wig. Now, according to director Fleming, the actress thought it was showed real commitment to shave her head for a movie, but she did not understand the real commitment that had to be showing up an hour early every day
to glue
a wig to your hair.
Yeah.
Or to your head. And they had to refilm a lot of shots when the wig just looked bad. Mm-hmm. But the only benefit from it, mm-hmm. even because the whole movie, I thought her hair just looks so bad.
Yeah, it looked weird. Yeah.
It looked weird the whole movie.
Or like off a little bit.
Yeah. So is that they, in this scene, can make it work by they glued on a neon green wig. Mm-hmm. Onto her head.
Yeah.
Now, he says, normally I can't think anybody can pull that off, but he thought actually she looked really good with the neon green hair. Yeah. But because they filmed this whole scene with her wearing a neon green wig, they just, like a green screen, changed the color to whatever color they wanted. They could have made it look rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. So it definitely looked, you know, in the like old-timey green screen when there's mm-hmm. like a line around, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It definitely, like, you know, when you're like playing like a video game and you can tell what items are you can interact with because they're slightly different.
They have like a little border.
Yeah, like it's like slightly a different like look. That's how her hair looked like when they did that effect to me. Like,
yeah, completely.
You could tell that her hair was CGI, which was funny.
All right, so then we have a scene where Sarah's laying in bed and she starts hear Chris calling out to her. He says she didn't answer the phone. She's like, it's 3 a.m. Chris is ready to move in together.
Yeah.
He thinks that's the next.
Yeah.
And then he says he loves her. He can't sleep anymore. He's never loved anyone except for his mom or maybe a little puppy he had once. Sarah tells him to go home and she goes back inside and Chris is yelling, I can't eat. I can't sleep. And he doesn't understand it. I almost feel sorry for him. And then I remember he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Sarah's dad comes out and is like, can I help you?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh. Then we were at the magic shop and Sarah is asking Liro how to undo a love spell. And she says, once you open a floodgate, how do you undo it? It must run its course. Nancy jumps in and says that just let Chris suffer. Mm-hmm. Liro says that it's not up to Nancy to judge suffering. Bonnie wants to know when Liro will let them in the back. And Sarah asks if all the missing kids from the neighborhood are hiding back there. Then she asks if black magic is back there. And Liro tells her that true magic is black nor white. It's only good and bad hearts of the witch which keeps its balance its own. Mm-hmm. Liro asks if they understand. And Bonnie says no. And then they all laugh. Liro continues saying that whatever they send out to the world will be returned times 3. Roselle said they didn't read that in any book, but Liro tells them it's in all faiths, in many cultures. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Mm-hmm. Nancy then wants to buy a book, Invoking the Spirit, and Liro tries to warn her against it, but Nancy says she's a big girl and she has $25, and Nancy's very proud that now she has money.
Yeah.
Dark Secret by Matthew Street plays while they all go to the beach. And they're all carrying animals. Rochelle carries a fish. I wrote notes on this later because she wants to be good at the swim team. Just like she wants to be able to be herself. She wants to be. Okay. Bonnie carries a butterfly because she wants to be beautiful.
Transform into a beautiful butterfly.
I'm trying to remember why Sarah carries a bird.
Who knows? She wants to fly.
I wrote it later. It's to represent. Oh, the bird is to represent her love bird for.
Oh, it's a
her desire, her desire for Chris. And then Nancy carries a snake, which is a symbolic of rebirth, transformation, and immortality. Nancy wanted a better life for herself and her mother, as well as power and leadership for herself. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you for letting me look that up. they make a magic circle in the sand and rocks with candles. I was like, how much candles can these people carry?
So many candles. They got a lot of candles. They pack them all in Rochelle's backpack. Say, Rochelle, carry all these candles.
Sarah tells how she used to dream of snakes and bugs, and when she opened her eyes, they would still be there. Nancy replies that snake is very powerful and should be respected.
Yeah, she was saying that was right before she killed herself. That was like one of her darkest times that she was having those visions.
Okay.
Well, that comes into play later.
Sure,
pretty much everyone probably already knows.
Then in the ritual, they call the corners. Nancy's east, Bonnie is south, Rochelle's west, and Sarah is north. A storm starts as they invoke the spirit, and Nancy is struck by lightning. Okay. Now, during this scene, the director said that they asked a person that like worked at the beach, mm-hmm. how far up the beach do we need to be mm-hmm. for our set to be safe? And mm-hmm. he pointed like 25 meters up or something, like mm-hmm. this is where you should be. But the waves kept getting closer. And as they were doing the spell, mm-hmm. filming the scenes, they said bigger and bigger waves are coming. When they stopped filming the scenes, the waves died down. Oh. And it would keep doing it. And they were like, the cast was freaking out by this.
Yeah.
And at one point, when they're really getting into the scene, they're getting really far in, a big enough wave came and washed away the whole set.
Oh, wow.
And they had to rebuild it to do it again a little higher up, and they were trying to do it.
Uh-huh.
He also said that the rocks that they filmed by are in like every movie ever. He's like, had I realized that, I was like, oh, that'd be pretty to film next to. Had he realized that, he would not have chosen that site.
That's funny.
The next morning, Nancy's seen walking on water, coming back to the beach. She says that she still feels Mano running through her veins. Then they hear sirens and they go and they see several beach sharks. And Nancy says it's a gift meant for her.
Mm-hmm.
The sharks were all plastic. The director wanted to know no real sharks were harmed in the making of this movie. Later, Nancy is driving and Sarah's complaining about how Chris doesn't stop. She goes on complaining about how Bonnie is a narcissist, but Bonnie says that she spent a lot of her life seen as a monster and now she's having a good time.
Yeah. And basically, she's saying that Bonnie and Rochelle were nice and now they're not nice anymore.
Sure.
Yeah.
Nancy asks what color the light is and they say it's red. She changes to green and she does this for several lights.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah says the whole threefold karma thing. Nancy accuses her of trying to win over the other two to her side.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah says it's that Nancy's just being paranoid. And Nancy yells that she's not paranoid. And Bonnie and Rochelle laugh and call her paranoid. Nancy says that Sarah can leave the group if she wants. And she says it's not like that. And Sarah says one of these times it's not going to be green. And Nancy decides to run a red light to prove that she isn't scared. And Rochelle and Bonnie are having the time of their lives.
Yeah.
This scene is based on a real life event from the director.
Oh, really?
He said he was in a car with a guy that was predicting when the lights were going to go green really well.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you know, one of these days it's not going to be green. And the driver looked at him annoyed, and that's when he hit a car. Because he made a comment, the guy turned, stopped paying attention to the road, and he hit a car. And the director's head went into the windshield, and he had to get stitches.
Wow.
So he's like, it was a big moment in his life, and he needed to include it in the film.
Yeah, except it turned out fine for them.
Yeah, it turned out fine for them, right?
Just swerved around.
In the locker room, we see Laura Lizzie. Her hair is continuing to fall out. She doesn't understand what she's done to deserve this.
Mm-hmm. She's such a wonderful person.
Right? So she's crying. Her friends come over to comfort her. Rochelle's watching, and her friend goes to get something to help her. When she runs off, Rochelle looks to the left, and if you're looking in the mirror, her reflection looks the wrong way. Like she turns to the left, her reflection should turn to the right, but it doesn't. It also turns left.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice this?
No,
I didn't notice this. The director said no one notices this effect. I always remember seeing this effect.
Oh, that's funny.
But he said they made it too subtle.
Yeah.
And people don't remember it happening.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't. I mean, I just watched it today. I don't remember that.
That's awesome. I was like, how could people not notice? That's good to know.
Wait. You said that scene when they were on the lawn or whatever was the last time they were all together. Is this to show that the coven's like fracturing or what?
It was, but it's not true because they're all together again after
her dad dies. Well, and also
they're doing
their spell. They're just not in the same shot together. Is that it?
But it's not correct because they were definitely in the same shot together. I was wrong. They're definitely in the shot together.
I thought you said the director said
that. The director said that like this was like the last time you saw them together, but they're definitely, when they go to visit her in her apartment.
No, you don't.
I don't know. No. Maybe they're not all in the same shot together
that must
at this
be
point.
It must be
they're
the shot.
They're all in the same room. They're just not all in the same
shot
together.
Yeah, that must be it. Yeah, that must be it.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
I got us off track.
Yeah, it's okay. So Sarah's on the phone with Chris, and he says that she looks like she needs someone to talk to. She asks how he could see what she looks like when they're on the phone. This reminds me of Scream when, you know, it's like Drew Barrymore's character, who they're like, I want to see who I'm looking at when on the phone. But it's Skeet Ulrich that says that, you know, it's supposed to be him and Scream that's doing this.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. Chris goes on to see that he saw her earlier, and he doesn't even know why he has to see her, but she finally agrees to go to dinner with him the following night. On that night, she's telling him about the group and how they're all turning their backs on her. And Chris is claiming to understand, but he doesn't really understand much. When she says that she doesn't understand what he's saying, he immediately agrees with her and says he has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
She asks if they were supposed to go to a restaurant, and he says no. Yeah. She tries to do...
He's still being a jerk. That's all I want to say.
He's still being...
Like, he's in this, like, love spell, or, like, I guess you would say he's just obsessed with her. He's not really in love with her, but he's still being a jerk.
Yeah. She tries to explain to him that what he's feeling isn't real, but he says he doesn't have time to think. He tries to give her a back rub, but she doesn't want it. She asks to be taken home. She gets out of the car, and she says she'll walk. And then he tackles her to the ground, gets on top of her. It's like he's trying to rape her right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scorn by Portishead plays while he's trying to take his pants off and he's pinning her arms.
Yeah.
She quickly knees him in the balls and she runs away.
Yeah, she escapes.
While he screams her name. She makes it to Rochelle's house. She's telling the group about the story of what happened, that he had this blank look in his eyes. Nancy looks more freaked out than Sarah does and wants to know where he would be. And Nancy realizes they're a party, and Rochelle confirms that the party's at Trey's house. And this is where, like, oh, that's the third boy's name, is Trey. I looked it up, he is. Well, Sarah asks Nancy not to go, but Nancy says she wants to play. At the party, Nancy walks in to many disgusted looks. The gossip starts to spread. Mitt says to Trey, she's here, you're here, we're all here. I never noticed that until this time watching it. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, because it's like his line earlier.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Remember the line earlier where he's like, she cries, and I cry, and we all cry.
Okay,
and so he's like, she's here, you're here, we're all here. Okay. Apparently, Breckenmeyer had like two lines in the original script, but he kept making everybody laugh by ad-libbing that the director kept giving more lines to him,
that's hilarious.
Which is hilarious. Chris runs up to ask if Sarah's with her. He follows her upstairs to a bedroom. Once there, he's confused. When he lays in the bed, Nancy gets on top of him, saying that they once had some really good times, and he says he's been trying to forget it. He shoves her away, and she starts to cry, and then she uses glamour to change into Sarah right in front of him.
So do you get this, that Nancy likes him too?
Well, they had a relationship beforehand.
Yeah, I'm just like, why? Why do y'all like this guy?
I don't know.
Just because he's a 90s heartthrob? I'm just like, ugh.
That could be it.
No.
Oh. He looks really stoned in this scene. I mean, I know he's under a spell, but he does look stoned. So once she puts on the glamour, I don't know if it's the spell that makes him just believe it's instantly Sarah, but all of a sudden he believes it's real, even though he knew.
And he's like.
And the spell works.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So then they start making out passionately. Then the other three arrive. Rochelle says they shouldn't be there, but Bonnie replies neither should Nancy. Inside, Laura Lizzie actually wants to talk to Rochelle, ask her how things are going, and we see a pretty obvious wig that she's wearing, and she looks extremely sad. Mm-hmm. When the real Sarah walks into the room, Chris is on top, and he sees Sarah. He looks back, and he's been kissing Nancy. He's freaked out. He jumps off the bed and proclaims that Nancy's a witch. Mm-hmm. Nancy laughs, and he's like, they were right, and she replies, they usually are. Mm-hmm. Nancy tells Chris that Sarah is a witch as well, but he doesn't want to believe it. Nancy goes on to tell him that she is there to help him forget about her. And Sarah's trying to make Nancy leave, but Nancy says he has to pay. When Chris tells Nancy that she's just jealous, Nancy stands up. She stands really fast and starts screaming that he doesn't even exist to her. She continues to list reasons why he's evil while she's hovering towards him. We can see that it freaks him out, and he slowly is backing away. Nancy says he treats all women like whores when he's the whore. Mm-hmm. Chris says that he's sorry, and Nancy goes even crazier. Oh, he's sorry. He's sorry. Mm-hmm. He's sorry. She starts shaking her head frantically. Then the windows are blown open, and Nancy's power, as Sarah screams no, Chris is thrown out of the window. He hits the ground, and he's killed.
Do you think that drop would kill you necessarily?
It was a second story drop?
I don't know.
Maybe if he landed
you
wrong.
You need to go limp.
But if you hit your head first.
You need to go limp.
It's easier said than done.
Just kidding.
If you see the ground coming, it's hard not to
go
get
limp
stiff.
And somebody might catch you because free dummy.
The Flash.
That's like Jack Handy joke.
Oh. It's like Impulse from Smallville.
It's like if you ever fall off the Empire State Building or something like that, go limp and somebody might catch you because, hey, free dummy.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I guess it depends on how you land.
If you hit your head.
I guess it depends on how you land.
Ooh,
I guess you could try to land on your feet. You're going to break your foot.
What movie is that? The Orphan, first kill?
Mm-hmm.
That we see her stepdad or her adopted father fall off and the way his neck just hits the ground and snaps a certain way.
Yikes.
It's like, ugh!
Yeah.
Sarah's explaining to her dad that she didn't want to get him to get hurt. She explains that she liked him.
What? Why, she girl? Liked why? Him.
And he was a good guy underneath.
I don't think he was. I didn't see any evidence of that.
The dad tries to comfort her when he tries to put his hand on her shoulder.
Don't touch me.
Everything I touch turns to shit. Sarah is on her balcony cutting Nancy out of a picture of the four girls. Mm-hmm. And she's performing a binding ritual on Nancy. Mm-hmm. Says, I bind you from doing harm, Nancy. Harm against other people and harm against yourself. She repeats it over and over as she wraps ribbon around the picture.
She had like a spool of like ribbon that like you used to wrap presents.
Sure.
It's like, you know what I mean? Like the curly ribbon. She had like a whole spool of it. Yeah. She needs so much ribbon.
I don't know.
Like, are they like, I don't know. Who knows how much you're going to need? Just use this whole spool. Not even like a fancy ribbon. No. A gift wrapping ribbon. I just found that funny. I don't know.
So this is where we get the bathroom scene where the three girls have turned against her. The door bolt opens by itself, and then the three girls are there saying they've been looking all over for her. Sarah says that the police were at her house, but she didn't tell them anything. And Nancy asks, then why does Sarah want to leave the circle? Sarah says she never said that. Nancy tells her she doesn't have to because she could read her thoughts now. Mm-hmm. Sarah tells her the people are dead. Chris is dead. Ray is dead. And I'm like, you forgot about the snake guy.
That's right. We don't care about him.
They don't care about him. Nancy says they all deserved it. And Sarah says, fine, I'm out then. And they say that they don't need a fourth, and Sarah may want to think about leaving the school. That's what Nancy says, that Bonnie adds, or the city, and Rochelle adds, or the planet.
I don't know why. I guess they're just following the leader, but I was like, I don't know why Bonnie and Rochelle are so against Sarah.
I think Nancy just has so much power that they might be scared of her.
Power over them. Or they're used to her being the power, like, leading the group, I guess.
Sure. Nancy asks Sarah to not put any more spells on her. Nancy tells her that in the old days, if a witch betrayed the coven, they would kill her. Nancy says bye with a smile. Rochelle says, sweet dreams. And Bonnie asks, how have you been sleeping? Mm. That night, Sarah rushes to the magic shop to ask Lyra for help. Sarah catches her up on the situation while she's crying. Lyra takes her into embrace and leads her to the forbidden back room. There we see a big circled star on the ground, and she says that this temple was built in the place of power. Lyra tells Sarah that her mother was a witch, and Sarah says she didn't know. She tells Sarah that she can defend herself, but she needs to surrender herself to a higher power. And she tells her to invoke the spirit. As they start the ritual, a magic boom runs through the shop, and Sarah runs off, and Lyra tries to call her back. Like, no, don't get scared, come back. Sarah runs home. She's calling for her dad and Ginny, and they're not there. When the phone rings, Nancy tells her that her parents flew to San Francisco because they thought she ran away to home. And then they tell her to turn on the TV, and it looks like the plane that her parents took has crashed, and the news reports there are no survivors. Mm-hmm. Sarah runs out of the house, but she sees the area is infested with snakes. Mm-hmm. She runs back inside to see that they're now blocking every exit. She hides in the bathroom, but snakes keep coming.
Snakes and bugs and rats.
Mm-hmm. Maggots.
Ugh, the roaches were really what got me. I'm like, yay.
So while the roaches were not harmed in the making of the movie, they were bred for the movie and they were bred sterile. So they could not breed afterwards. Uh-huh. So they could not infest the set.
Oh, funny.
Because they would then forever have a roach problem.
I guess that's a problem, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But they used 3,000 snakes in this movie.
Oh, wow. The snakes wouldn't bother me that much. The cockroaches. No.
Well, the one on her face that happens in a little bit was CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
The director's like, I wouldn't do that to an actress. Yeah, that's just gross. Yeah. Sarah yells, stop it. And then Nancy shows up and is like, gotcha, and starts laughing. And Nancy says, if I was ever as pathetic as you are, I would have killed myself ages ago. You should get on with it.
Yeah. So this is like the vision she was having before she was turning colors. Mm-hmm.
Nancy turns on the shower and then runs off. As Sarah leaves the bathrooms, there's no snakes anywhere. Mm-hmm. Downstairs, Sarah asks about her dad and Ginny, and Nancy says that Sarah will be seeing them soon because she's going to kill herself tonight. Sarah says they won't, and Nancy is surprised, and the three witches start floating in the air. Nancy starts listing off reasons why Sarah would. She blames Sarah for Chris's death and then says that she killed her own mom before she was born, and that's something that even Nancy didn't have the power to do. Yeah. Rochelle then asks why Sarah isn't using magic against them, and Nancy screams, is because Sarah is weak. Mm-hmm. The three start chanting, now is the end, let her go in peace. And as they continue, a suicide note hits the floor in Sarah's handwriting.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like peer pressure going amok because...
It is. It's like Bonnie, cyberbullying, but...
No, but I'm saying Bonnie and Rochelle to go along with this. Sure. And like, that's like, doesn't go along with what their character was, this whole movie.
You think the magic is just changing them?
I don't know. Or they don't really think it's going to go that far.
I don't know.
They're just going along with
they're
it.
They're asking her to kill herself.
Yeah. I also don't know why they're mad at her. Just for leaving the coven or whatever, but... Yeah. I don't know. After you guys implanted like nightmares into her.
Yeah, that's like, crazy. Oh. Nancy uses the opportunity to say, hey, look at your wrist. When she pulls them up to look, she slices the knife against both wrists. Mm-hmm. Sarah says it's not real. And then Nancy's like, then why are you still bleeding? And blood drips onto the suicide note. Mm-hmm. Nancy tells her to run like the coward she is. And when she does, she screams that she's so pathetic. She grabs a towel to like cover her cuts. And Sarah sees the picture of her mother. Downstairs, Nancy tells Rochelle to go upstairs and see what's happening. And Rochelle protests, saying that they've gone too far.
Yeah.
Nancy threatens to slit her throat if she doesn't go. And Bonnie jumps up to take Rochelle.
Maybe they're scared of her.
I think they are. And mm-hmm. she takes them upstairs to protect Rochelle from Nancy. Mm-hmm. Sarah's now lying on the floor and she starts invoking the spirit. When Sarah hears Rochelle and Bonnie coming up to Sarah, she switches to chanting, by the power of 3x3, make them see, make them see. Rochelle tells Bonnie to look in the mirror, and Rochelle's hair has fallen out and looks like Laura Lizzie's hair, with Bonnie's scars coming back with a vengeance all over her face. Mm-hmm. Now, Rochelle, I get she made sense. Her spell made someone else's hair fall out.
Yeah.
So coming back times three would make her hair fall out faster.
Yeah.
But Bonnie just made someone look beautiful.
Well, herself. But yeah.
But
yeah.
Why is that coming back? Treat others yourself. Oh, if I can make others look beautiful, I would.
I guess if you would think about it, she'd look even more beautiful.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. It didn't quite make sense. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Bonnie never does anything to hurt anybody until now.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like acting, she's acting like a little like full of herself or whatever. But like, that's understandable. But sure. Bonnie's the one that I'm like, she was so nice the whole movie. And now she's cool to try to like make one of her friends commit suicide. No, not even murder one of her friends.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So this mirror scares them off and they run out of the house. Nancy calls after them, want to know what's happening. Sarah continues to evoke the spirit, and then we see a picture of her mother start to animate. In the picture, her hair is like flying in the photo. Wind is coming. She takes this hat off. Mm-hmm. Her mother looks at her and tells her to reach inside herself for power. She continues to evoke the spirit while the storm gets even stronger outside. The doors to her balcony burst open, and we see the wounds in her wrist start to heal. Nancy's walking upstairs and starts to call Sarah. Nancy's looking around the room. When she faces the mirror, she sees her own reflection, but she turns around. Her reflection in the mirror slowly turns to Sarah, who turns around, reaches out of the mirror, grabs her, scares the shit out of her. It is a good effect. And she steps out of the mirror, and Nancy's freaking out. Sarah's like, oh, did I frighten you, Nancy? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I loved it. And Sarah tells her that Mana came to her, saved her, and they gave her a message.
Every time.
What did I say?
I'm just joking. Do you know that? You know there's like a meme about saying croissant, and somebody said croissant. Okay. That's how I feel like I'm doing to you.
Okay.
Mana.
Do you want to read the notes?
No, I'm just joking. Continue. All right.
Sarah tells her that the spirit came to her, saved her life, and gave a message to her. You're in deep shit. Just then, the bugs start crawling over Nancy's face. She goes on to say that Nancy's abused the power that she was given, and now she has to pay the price. And bugs keep coming out of her sleeves.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross. And then Sarah's like,
hey. Her hands turn to
the snakes. And then her hair turns to snakes.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but the cockroaches, that would have got me out. Yeah, like, no. I'm out. I would have ran away.
Sarah mentions that Bonnie and Rochelle left without saying goodbye, and that's just bad manners. Nancy screams, and it all disappears. And Sarah tells her to relax, because it's only magic. Mm-hmm. And then Sarah asks, now who's pathetic? Mm-hmm. Sarah starts apologizing. Nancy starts apologizing in a begging-like tone. She says it all got out of hand and she won't play games anymore. Sarah is glad that Nancy is sorry, and Nancy says she's going to go. And Sarah says one last thing and starts to cast the binding spell again. Nancy asks her to wait. Then she asks her to wait again. She asks her to stop. And then she pulls out a knife that starts attacking.
Yeah.
The wind pushes so hard that they fly against the wall. And they're fighting like they're levitating. Like gravity is switched 90 degrees. Uh-huh. Nancy keeps yelling repeatedly, screaming that she's going to kill her.
I'll kill you. hell.
Yeah, it was crazy. This dresser comes, Nancy jumps out of the way, and it looks like it smashes Sarah. And then when Nancy goes looking through the rubble to find it, she finds only her clothes, which are lying flat on the ground. And Nancy's line here is tricky, tricky, tricky. And when she lifts up her hand, grab the knife down in the clothes, Sarah reappears into her clothes, does a double kick to her chest, sends her flying across cool the too. Room.
I like that.
Into a mirror.
She reanimates in her clothes or whatever.
It's so cool. The director was trying to explain this effect to so many people, and they couldn't see it. They couldn't see his vision. Yeah. So when it finally came to life, people were like, that's what you meant. Nancy flies across the room, crashes into a mirror. It smashes, and she goes to the ground, and then Sarah continues the binding.
She finished the binding spell.
Right. Some days later, Bonnie and Rochelle show up to ask Sarah how she's doing. Sarah says she's good. She's much better because she can sleep at night now. Rochelle says they want to apologize and they felt really bad. And Sarah says, oh, what, for trying to kill me? Bonnie jumps in to say, yeah, that they never thought it would go that far. Just then Sarah's father walks by. And they have a little exchange.
Yeah, so her parents are fine.
Right. They added this scene because people were worried about the parents. Funny. Like, did they really die? They killed the parents and you let the other two live? Rochelle tells them that the whole plane crash thing was a glamour.
It was funny.
practical joke. Yeah. Yeah. And Sarah goes, oh, funny.
Yeah.
Bonnie says she wants to know if Sarah has any powers anymore because they don't. Sarah says that she doesn't. Bonnie says if they want to hang out or just call the corners. And Sarah tells them, oh, maybe just hold your breath until I call.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. As they're walking away, Rochelle whispers that she probably doesn't have any powers anyway. And then they both laugh. And then Sarah turns around. As she concentrates, the wind starts blowing.
She like makes a storm.
The girls turn back. Mm-hmm. Lightning hits a big part of a tree, which severs it, disconnects it from the tree. Uh-huh. And they have to dive out of the way so they don't get crushed by the tree. As they look back with worried look on their faces, Sarah tells them to be careful because they don't want to end up like Nancy. Mm-hmm. Then we cut to Nancy tied to a bed. And she's screaming while a nurse gives her a shot of something. Mm-hmm. She's screaming that he gave me power and that I could fly.
Haldol. No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Oh, maybe. And we also see that she's got all these cuts in her face.
Yeah.
And the credits roll and I have The Touch by Heather Nova plays.
Mm-hmm. The end.
The font
on the end credits was funny.
Was it good?
It was kind of very stylized, like end credit font, very like 90s witchy. that was funny.
Oh, man.
The end.
So, yeah. Wow. So the technical advisor they had, her name was Pat Devin, and she was a high priestess and a public information officer in the Covenant of Goddesses and the elder priestess of the Dynac feminist separatist tradition.
Okay.
She had this long title.
What a classic. A craft.
I loved it. It was good.
You know, like, this movie does something that modern day movies don't do, which is, like, it's kind of nothing happens a lot of the movie. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They're like, it's kind of slow, but I don't feel like it. I wasn't bored by it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you wanted to summarize it really quickly, you could say new girls joins the school. New girl finds friends.
Yeah.
Together they become witches.
Yeah.
They do spells. Some of the spells go too far.
Yeah.
Witches break apart, try to kill each other. One overtakes the others, and the movie ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, it didn't feel.
But I liked it. Boring. So, like, the scenes where they're not really doing much, but, like, hanging out. And sometimes they're doing, like, some magic spells. And I liked it. I like that they're just, like, hanging out and being friends.
Sure.
It makes it sadder at the end when they like turn on her. She's at a new school. I guess she probably feels like an outsider a little bit. She finds these friends. The part that I think does not work is the quote unquote male love interest, who's not even really like a love interest. Because I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, why, girl?
Yeah.
Like, I understand at first why she's flirting with him, because he's, like I said, a 90s hunk. Okay.
Right.
But then immediately after he lies and says that she's slept with him, why does she care about him anymore? He didn't do it. This must have happened off screen. Because at no point is he saying anything sweet to her that I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe he's a nice guy.
He likes her head.
Yeah, I guess he said everyone else has like a pinhead, but you have a nice head. Like, what a compliment.
Right. Maybe he looked past her fake wig or like really bad hair.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Margo, for joining us again. Listeners, if you want to continue listening, please like and subscribe. We have new episodes every Monday. If you want to find us on Instagram, we're at Nightmare Echoes Pod. If you want to email us, we're at nightmareechoespod@gmail.com. We also have a Reddit page. All right, thank you for listening.
Bye. Bye.
You have one more thing you want to talk about the craft.
Oh yeah, yeah. Did you notice every time they like put their hands up in the air to do like spells? What's her name? The main character.
Is it Sarah?
Yeah.
Sarah.
Every time Sarah like really half-asses it.
Yeah.
She like puts her hands up and is like, ugh. Like, I don't know if she's trying to show she's not into it, or maybe the actress didn't want to do the real spell. I don't know what that was about, but
maybe she's so natural at magic that she can half-ass it and it works fine.
I don't know. But I noticed that like everybody's like really getting into it and she's just like, eh, whatever.
I did want to talk a little bit about the sequel because I bought it on Blu-ray, which I should have rented it because it was that bad, I felt. But it's got David Duchovny in it, which I loved.
Oh. Ooh.
And who is the main villain?
Frozebulk.
Yeah. I'm bad at her name. Yeah. So she has a 3-second cameo at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And it was roped in. So yeah, this is the same story. They rebooted it. They had a girl show up to a town with her mother. Her mother remarried. So she has a new stepdad who's trying to be a caring guy, but his rules are a little weird for her. But she finds a new witch coven. They take her in and there's a part where they have a falling out. So it's like them against her. But what the big changes here, a lot of the same points happen. There's a boy she likes. The boy kills himself this time, but then it turns out it was actually her stepfather because he's a warlock in charge of a male coven who couldn't stand that one of his followers was becoming more feminine because he was becoming friends with this girl coven and through their spells liking the things that they like. So he has him killed,
okay.
Which is insane. So at the end, the group has to come back together and try to overpower David Coveney's character, who's the leader of this other warlock group. They filmed this. They went out to screenings and people were mad that they just rebooted the story that had nothing to do with the original. So they added a scene partway through for no reason at all. Our main character is looking through her mom's files and she finds an adoption record. And it didn't feel like it fit in the movie at all. Like, where's this scene coming from? She's just looking through them. She's like, Mom, explain this to me. And her mom has this crying, emotional scene. Her mom's played by Michelle Monaghan. She's from the Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She cries. She's like, you're my best friend's child, but my best friend could not take care of you, so I promised that I would always take care of you and I would raise you like you're my own, and I feel like I had that you never had a clue that you were not my own child.
That's not cool.
Right? Well, so they did this so that at the very end of the movie, after the credits, she goes to visit her real mom, and her real mom is Nancy from the original movie, and she gets a 3-second cameo there at the end.
They're just tying it in.
That was their attempt to tie it in to see, be like, look, it is a sequel, and they changed the movie name The Craft to The Craft Legacy, since they brought one legacy character in.
Boy.
For 3 seconds.
Boy.
So I just wanted to talk about that. Thanks for listening.
Mission accomplished, I guess.
Right? Yeah, I know. All right.